The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "The giving up of activities that are based on material desire is what great learned men call the renounced order of life, sannyas. And giving up the results of all activities is what the wise call renunciation, tyaga." Text 3. Tyajam dosha vad ityeka karma prahur manishinaha yagya dana tapa karma na tyajam iti chapare. Translation. Some learned men declare that all kinds of fruitive activities should be given up as faulty. Yet other sages maintain that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance should never be abandoned. Text 4. Nishchayam shunume pratra tyage bharata sattama tyago hi purushat vyagra trivida samprakirtitaha. Translation. O best of the Bharatas, now hear my judgment about renunciation, O tiger among men. Renunciation is declared in the scriptures to be of three kinds. Text number 5. Yagyadana tapakarma natyajam kayam evatat yagyodanam tapaschaiva pavanani manishinam. Translation. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. Text 6. Etanyapi tu karmani sangam tyaktva palani cha kartavyani ti me parta nischitam matam uttamam. Translation. All these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty, O son of Pritha. That is my final opinion. Text 7. Niyatasya tu sannyasa karmano nupapadyate mohatasya parityagas tamasa patikirtata. Translation. Prescribed duties should never be renounced. If one gives up his prescribed duties because of illusion, such renunciation is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Text 8. Dukam ityeva yat karma kaya klesha payatyajet sakritva rajasam tyagam naiva tyaga palam labhet. Translation. Anyone who gives up prescribed duties as troublesome or out of fear of bodily discomfort is said to have renounced in the mode of passion. Such action never leads to the elevation of renunciation. Text 9. Kayamityeva yat karma niyatam kriyate arjuna sangam chaktva palam chaiva natyaga tvitko mataha. Translation. O Arjuna, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. Text 10 and the final text. Advaistya kushalam karma kushale nanu shachyate tyagi sattva samavishto medhavi chinna sangshayaha. Translation. The intelligent renouncer situated in the mode of goodness, neither hateful of inauspicious work nor attached to auspicious work, has no doubts about work. Going back to text 28. Anything done as sacrifice, charity, or penance without faith in the Supreme, O son of Pritha, is impermanent. It is called asat and is useless both in this life and the next. purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Anything done without the transcendental objective, whether it be sacrifice, charity, or penance, is useless. Therefore, in this verse, it is declared that such activities are abominable. Everything should be done for the Supreme in Krishna consciousness. Without such faith and without the proper guidance, there can never be any fruit. In all the Vedic scriptures, faith in the Supreme is advised. In the pursuit of all Vedic instructions, the ultimate goal is the understanding of Krishna. No one can obtain success without following this principle. Therefore, the best course is to work from the very beginning in Krishna consciousness under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. That is the way of making everything successful. In the conditional state, people are attached, people are attracted to worshipping demigods, ghosts, or yakshas like Kuvera. The mode of goodness is better than the modes of passion and ignorance, but one who takes directly to Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all three modes of material nature. Although there is a process of gradual elevation, if one by the association of pure devotees takes directly to Krishna consciousness, that is the best way. And that is recommended in this chapter. To achieve success in this way, one must first find the proper spiritual master and receive training under his direction. Then one can achieve faith in the Supreme. When that faith matures, in course of time it is called love of God. This love is the ultimate goal of the living entities. One should therefore take to Krishna consciousness directly. That is the message of this 17th chapter. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 17th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the divisions of faith. That means that everything that's done as a sacrifice or as charity or penance should be done with the transcendental objective. That means, transcendental objective means to please Krishna. That's the objective. That's transcendental. If one is thinking he wants to please himself as the primary goal, that's not transcendental. Because he cannot please himself directly. He has to please himself by pleasing Krishna. Therefore, the primary transcendental objective is to please Krishna. Naturally, we living entities want to enjoy ourselves. We want to be happy. But with higher knowledge, we can understand that our happiness doesn't come from directly trying to enjoy we can understand through intelligence that my happiness will come by giving Krishna pleasure. Therefore, our ultimate goal then has to be to give Krishna pleasure. Going on to the next chapter, conclusion, the perfection of renunciation. Arjuna said, O mighty armed one, I wish to understand the purpose of renunciation, tyaga, and of the renounced order of life, sannyas, O killer of the Keshi demon, master of the senses. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, the giving up of activities that are based on material desire is what great learned men call the renounced order of life, sannyas. And giving up the results of all activities is what the wise call renunciation, tyaga. Purport: the performance of activities for results has to be given up. This is the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. But activities leading to advanced spiritual knowledge are not to be given up. So the difference here is that one should not give up activities, one should give up the desire to enjoy the fruit of those activities. The activity, if it's done without attachment, and if it's done in order to please Krishna, then that's fine. Those should not be given up. As, yes, Krishna will say that in just a few verses. Because this is a big dilemma. The impersonalists think that one should give up the activities themselves, stop acting. Or, as we've seen, the display of the person who has his, he has his fingers over his eyes and fingers over his mouth. Hear no, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. This is their idea. So they want to stop seeing, stop hearing, stop speaking. And therefore they even perform, they even take up the vows of Monavrata or silence, because they don't want to speak anything evil. They know that the tendency to speak, we have a tendency to criticize others and to speak nonsense. They don't want to do that, so they think, I'll take a vow. I won't speak anything. Or they go off to the forest, I won't see anything that can arouse evil desires. I don't want to live in the center of town where there's so many objects of gratification that will incite bad desires. I don't want to become envious of someone else's house or someone else's car or some other attractive object. So I'll go to the forest. Another example was, so Bari Muni, he went to the bottom of the river to get away from these desires. He was so afraid that he would become impelled by material desires, so he was able to live in the bottom of the river, the bottom of the lake. He had the yoga power to do that. But even down there, he ran into some difficulties. There were some fish that were having a relationship, and he perceived the pleasure of that. From seeing the fish, his mind became agitated for himself to enjoy, and he got out of the water and he went and he got 50 wives as a result of that. So this process of trying to avoid physically may be helpful to some degree, as they say, out of sight, out of mind. There's some value in that. But ultimately, unless one has some positive engagement for the senses, then they will drag him back anyway. It is said, you can go to the forest, but your mind goes with you. And if your mind is still attached to sense objects, then you won't stay in the forest very long. Or like the impersonalists, they want to merge into the Brahman, rise up, but they haven't purified their consciousness yet. Yenye ravandaksha vimuktimaninas tvayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhaya aruya kritshtrena param param tata patantito nadvita yushmarangaya. They rise up, but because of impure intelligence, they again fall down to the material. They come back to perform some altruistic work, open hospital, open a school. They can't give up activity because it's the nature of the soul to be active. Either one will be active on the material level or on the spiritual level. Therefore, one should become active on the spiritual level. Can't give up activities. If someone tries not to eat, he can do that for a little while, but it's artificial. So he'll end up eating something else. Better to eat prasadam. One cannot give up looking at beautiful things. Better to look at the form of Krishna. Become attracted. Actually, the eyes and all the senses, they become attracted to whatever they are accustomed to seeing. It's an amazing thing about the senses. They actually become attached to whatever the objects that are available to them. Otherwise, how is it that we see that all the different people, they become attached to their home countries, to their family members? Not only that, but all the species become attached to their home, to their tree, whatever it may be, whether it's a tree or it's a hole they live in, they're attached to that. One time, Prabhupada was on a morning walk and there were some bird droppings. You know the story, there was a large amount of bird droppings. Prabhupada stopped and said, "What does this mean?" And so, you know, the devotees, they didn't know. He was trying to think maybe there was some mystical, there was something mystical about it. It's the excreta of a bird. And Prabhupada said, "No, what this means is that even the birds are attached to their home. He's staying right here. He's not going anywhere, so therefore it's dropping. He's attached to staying in that one place." Everyone's attached. We become attached. How is it, if that's not the case, that people would remain living in the North Pole? How could they stand to live in such a cold environment? So harsh. But they become attached to it. They like it. Wherever we go, we will become attached to that situation. Whatever music we hear. It's like, how is it that people are born and they hear a particular type of music when they're young? And then they become attached to that music. All different types of music. But wherever they're raised up, they become attached to that music. This is because the senses have a tendency to become attached to their objects of the senses. If one makes the objects of the senses all transcendental, then his senses and his mind will become attached to those things. And then he won't have to worry about the senses. The example is given that if you take out the poison fangs of snakes, then they're not dangerous anymore. You don't have to worry about the snake biting you because he has no poison teeth, poison fangs. So taking out the poison fangs means one has to become practiced to always engage his mind and senses and intelligence in Krishna. Krishna has to become the focal point of everything. And then there's no danger anymore. He's attracted to Krishna naturally now. How? Because he practiced. It's like someone doesn't know how to ride a bike. Well, he practiced. In the beginning, you don't know, but you practice and you learn. And then you don't have to worry that when I ride a bike, am I going to fall down? You know how to ride the bike. Continuing, text 3. Some learned men declare that all kinds of fruitive activities should be given up as faulty, yet other sages maintain that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance should never be abandoned. O best of the Bharatas, now hear my judgment about renunciation. O tiger among men, renunciation is declared in the scriptures to be of three kinds. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. That's an important point. One may think he's very advanced, and he may be very advanced, but these three, sacrifice, charity, and penance, will purify him even more. Therefore, they shouldn't be given up. He may think that they have some contamination, that there's always some, as explained earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, that for every activity, it's covered by some degree of fault. Even the brahmanas, they have to perform sacrifices, but there's some, sometimes they have to sacrifice animals. So there's some fault even in that activity. But when one engages in devotional service to Krishna, there's no fault in that activity. Although there may be some superficial, it may appear that there's some fault, there's no fault. Because, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, everything becomes Brahman. The performer, the ingredients, the sacrifice, everything becomes purified. Just like when gold is put into fire, it's purified. Whatever impurities were there, they become burned away. They're removed. So we may be imperfect, we may have impurities, but because we're being engaged under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master in devotional service, and that devotional service to Krishna is purifying. This is the ultimate sacrifice, yajna, sankirtan yajna. That's the ultimate sacrifice. And charity. What's the ultimate charity? To give Krishna consciousness to others. And the ultimate penance, to make up for all of our bad activities, is also Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it's the supreme sacrifice, charity, and penance. Text 6. All these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty. O son of Pita, that is my final opinion. This principle of duty is very important, that one needs to give up the idea of doing what he feels like doing. Because if we act on that principle, what I feel like doing, then feeling comes from the mind, and the mind is getting impulses from the senses. And the senses, as we discussed earlier, are becoming attached to their sense objects. So then what happens is, we are being influenced by material energy. And it's like a child. Let's say his parents send him to the store. They give him some money and they say, go buy some bread, come back. All right, so he goes. And on the way to the store, there's a carnival. And he's enamored. He's attracted by all the sounds and the colors and the lights and the excitement. And he goes there and he spends all the money, and then it's very late at night and he has no money left. He's lost. He forgot his duty. He forgot what he was supposed to be doing, and he became captivated by the illusion of the carnival. We're like that. We actually have some duty, and the duty is we're supposed to be serving Krishna. But we've forgotten now, and we're captivated by this carnival-like material world. And we've spent all of our money and all of our time, and now we're lost and exploited and unhappy. So, duty is very important in spiritual life. And spiritual duty is more important than material duty. Spiritual duty includes material duty. It's like if you have $1 million, it includes $1,000 and $100. If someone gives you $1 million, then you don't have to say, well, thank you, now I have to go get $100 somewhere. Why do you have to get $100 somewhere? It's already included. If one is engaged in the highest service to please Lord Krishna, then why does he have to worry about pleasing all the subordinates like the demigods or the lower ones like the government leaders or lower ones like the city leaders or family leaders? He's already pleasing Krishna. That means he's pleasing everyone. It's all included. It's like if the government sends you, drafts you in the army. Well, you're already doing your duty to the government. You don't have to also do... It's not like the city officials can say, now you have to fulfill your obligations to our city. It's your week to clean up the parkland. Once every month, one member has to clean up the park and it's your month and you have to come back and do it. He says, no, I don't have to come back and do it. I'm here doing the government's work. You discuss it with them. So you can tell people when they say, why don't you get a job, or why don't you do something for humanity or for the family? Say, well, you know, Krishna's engaged me in his service. You'll have to take it up with him. I'm already engaged in doing what the Supreme wants me to do. Continue, text 7. Prescribed duties should never be renounced if one gives up his prescribed duties because of illusion. Such renunciation is said to be in the mode of ignorance. So some people, they just become, they don't know. Due to illusion, they give up their duty. They don't know out of ignorance. Therefore, they're in tamaguna. Out of ignorance. He doesn't know what should be done and what shouldn't be done. And the next one, he gives up, he renounces, he does renunciation, but because it's troublesome. It's too troublesome. Or it's uncomfortable. He gives up something because it's he has a duty to perform some service, but he thinks, no, it's too much trouble. I don't want to do it. He knows he should do it. Whereas the person in ignorance, he doesn't even know what he should do. He's just bewildered. Ignorant. He can't understand. It's like a dog. If you tell a dog, now, you know, this is how you should behave, and don't bark at people unnecessarily. You should keep yourself very clean, and don't run after any female dogs. You can explain all those things, but he's unable to understand. He's just in ignorance. He's an animal, so he's ignorant, and humans who behave are also ignorant. But the person in passion, he has some intelligence. He knows what's right and wrong, but no, I don't care if it's right or wrong. It's too uncomfortable for me. So he gives up his duty. Then, in text 9, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. Without considering whether I'm going to be famous for this or infamous. That shouldn't be a consideration. Now I'm asked to take up Krishna consciousness. What will the people think? Will I become popular? Or will I become unpopular? It doesn't matter. He doesn't consider that. Well, now my duty is to go and distribute books, let's say. So, well, what will people, will it be cold or will it be hot? These considerations are not to be taken for one who wants to make spiritual progress. He just considers, this is my duty and I do it. Prabhupada, for example, his Guru Maharaj asked him to preach in English. So he was 70 years old, living in Vrindavan, and he thought, if I'm going to carry out this order, I have to go to America. So he left at 70, the age of 70, with no money, to a foreign country. Nobody does that. That's unheard of. To start a spiritual movement at the age of 70, in a foreign country. You've never been out of the country before. With no money, no backing, no supporters, no assistance, just alone. But because he didn't consider what was going to be comfortable or his own considerations, whether he'd be a failure. Imagine, he could have died on the ship on the way over. He had, two heart attacks. He could have died on the middle of the sea. And no one would have been there. There would have been no samadhi. They wouldn't have made a samadhi for him. There would have been no one to perform the last rites because they were all just sailors. You know, there was nobody there who knew anything about Brahminical activities. Who knows? So what a thing could have happened. He could have died on the way there. He gave up Vrindavan. If he had stayed in Vrindavan and he passed away, he would have gone for sure back to Godhead. And it would have been glorious. But here he was on the sea in the middle of the Straits of Gibraltar or something like that, the Atlantic Ocean. What if he had died? He didn't consider that. Whether this will be auspicious, inauspicious. No, just this is the instruction of my spiritual master. I have to try to do it. There's no question of auspicious or inauspicious. So are there any questions? So the question is, if one is trying to execute the order of the spiritual master, still he has to use his own intelligence to decide how to perform that activity best. Yes, that's right. That doesn't mean that one disobeys the instruction or avoids it. He carries it out with good intelligence, like Prabhupada chose America, and he chose New York. He skipped England, because England is no longer the leader of the world, and Prabhupada knew that well. Therefore, his idea was, if I can convince the leaders of the world, if I can convince the Americans, then the whole world will follow. That was good intelligence. His spiritual master didn't give the specifics. He just said, preach in English. So, okay, America, they also speak English. England, they also speak English. And Australia, they also speak English. But let's go to America because it's the leader. They're the rich country, powerful country. That was good intelligence. And he was right. And he went to New York. First he got in any way he could. They say, go in like a pin, in like a needle, out like a plow. You know that example? The analogy? When you go in, you go in like a pin, quietly. Nobody's disturbed, a little pin. But then when you go and you build up and you come out like a plow, boom. So Prabhupada went in like a little pin. Nobody even noticed. It was in like a little needle. Or another example that Prabhupada gave, he said, when there's a crowded room, the room's completely crowded, so a man, he wants to come in. And they say, no, it's too crowded. He says, no, I'll just stand up. I won't take very much room. So they say, all right, you can stand up. So he squeezes in. Then finally, gradually sits down. And then gradually lays down. So in the beginning, he just... it begs a little bit of space. That's intelligence. So, Srila Prabhupada, he came into America. He went first to Butler, Pennsylvania. So he wasn't making any plows there. No plowing going on. He was doing his little needlework, just speaking at the YMCA or at the local, the Eagle. Was it the... Butler Eagle, a little newspaper they carried. Then he thought, let me try New York. Even amongst in the material world, they call New York the Big Apple. In other words, if you win New York, you can win something. So Prabhupada said, let me try New York. And the saying goes that if you're going to shoot, Chanakya Pandit says, if you're going to go hunting, you don't hunt for a rabbit. Hunt for the rhino. Because then if you're a hunter, if you achieve the rhino, that's a great accomplishment. And if you don't, no one will criticize you because it's very difficult to to kill a rhino. And if you're going to plunder, plunder the government mint. Don't bother just plundering some little store. Go for the government. And then if you don't succeed, then that's nothing so bad. You tried the government, it's difficult. Similarly, he thought, let me shoot for the rhino. Let me try New York. That's intelligence. The order was there to preach in English, but he didn't say where. And he didn't say every detail. He didn't say, okay, take these books, print these books, now put them in a tray thing, now take, get it, go to Sumati Maharaji, ask her for a... He didn't ask, say all that. He just said... So one has to be intelligent to take the order of the spiritual master and execute it in the best possible way. But he has to be careful not to deviate from that instruction in the name of being very creative and intelligent. Sometimes one becomes over-intelligent. There's a story of an over-intelligent disciple. Once he wanted to perform a big ceremony for his Guru Maharaj. So he took the money out of the Guru Maharaj's bank account and spent it. And then he offered this wonderful feast. And the Guru said, this is wonderful. This is so nice. How did you do this? He said, by your mercy, Gurudev. But that wasn't actually pleasing to the Guru, that he had taken all of the Guru's money to... Other questions? What are prescribed duties? Well, there's prescribed duties according to the body. That's varnashram. And then there's prescribed duties according to the soul, and that's devotional service. Of the two, if one can perform prescribed duties on the spiritual platform, that takes precedence over the varnashram principles. In many cases, they will be parallel. They'll coincide. But if there's some conflict, then the spiritual duty has to be taken as more important. Prescribed duties, rise early in the morning, chant 16 rounds, follow the four principles. These are our prescribed duties. Preach Krishna consciousness, associate with devotees, keep clean. These are all prescribed duties that are favorable for the discharge of devotional service. This is called sharanagati. The surrender to Krishna begins with accepting everything that is favorable for the discharge of devotional service. Anukula, anukulyena. And giving up everything that's pratikula, whatever is unfavorable should be given up. Going to the bar, for example, that's unfavorable for my devotional service, because if I go to the bar, then there's drinking and so many prajalpa and dirty, and I'll waste Krishna's money. It's so unfavorable, so I have to give that up. A Krishna conscious Kshatriya. What are the prescribed duties for a Krishna conscious Kshatriya? Yes, Krishna conscious Kshatriya has to lead the people. He has to protect. Kshatriya means he delivers from harm. He protects all the people under his care. And he has some area of jurisdiction, whether it's small or big. Like Yudhisthira was the emperor of the whole world. But there were subordinate kings also, so they were also Kshatriyas. And under those, there were other subordinates, and they had their area. But every Kshatriya has to protect those under his care, and he has to be ready to fight for the right cause. He has to give charity. Karna, a name for Karna, is famous. People always come up to me and say, oh, Danbir Karna, because he's famous as Danavir, hero of charities. He was a Kshatriya. There was nothing he would not give. He was once approached by Indra in disguise, and Indra acted like he was a Brahmin. And he said, please give me the charity of your natural... He was born with natural armor, golden armor on his body. And so this so-called Brahmin asked that for charity, so he cut it off. Therefore, he got the name Dhanavir. So, so charitable. He would give anything to a Brahmin. Arjuna? Oh, yes. Because Arjuna fought on Krishna's side. And Karna could have done that too, and he should have. That was his disqualification. He had many good qualifications, there's no doubt. But unfortunately, he didn't fight on the side of Krishna. So the question is, if we do some activity, how do we do it without attachment? Because generally, a person does something because of something, for some reason. But the reason is to please the beloved. Or, that's on the higher level, but on the lower level, it's a duty. I have to do it. It's like a soldier. The commander says, "All right, soldiers, over that hill." He doesn't say, "Well, I don't know if I want to go over that hill. I'm not particularly interested in going over that hill. That hill looks like it's too steep for..." None of those considerations will be appreciated by the commander. Commander says, "Over the hill, you go over the hill." That's duty. And they train them like that from the very beginning. Now, we may say, "Well, I don't want to be engaged in some activity like army duty." But Prabhupada says, in spiritual life, there is some similarity. It's something like accepting the orders of a commander. But the difference is that it's not done out of ignorance, and it's not done... We're not following some commander who may not know what he's doing. We're following Krishna, who knows exactly what he's doing. And if Krishna says that satatam kirtayantamam, always chant my glories, well, then I'm going to always chant Krishna's glories. That's good. So, the motivation is either love or duty, as described here. Although, love may not be there in the beginning, so then we have to use duty. Later on, love will be there and you don't have to worry about motivation because it'll be motivation out of love for Krishna. Just like a mother. If her baby's crying, you don't have to say, "Now it's your duty. You have to go." You don't have to tell her it's her duty to take care of her baby. Of course, nowadays, things are a little different. But in a natural state, the mother will immediately run. You don't have to say, "Oh, mother, look, your baby is crying. You're supposed to stop what you're doing now and go over and take care of your baby." She knows. She has love for her child. She goes. Spontaneously. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.